You may be seated. Our next case is 14-1744, Disciplinary Counsel versus Raymond Thomas Lee III. Mr. Lee.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice and Justices of the Court, and Mr. Sheets. It is an honor to appear before the Court, although I regret the circumstances of this particular case. May it please the Court, my name is Ray Lee, and I represent myself, but I'm also hoping to play a small role in the writing of some good law on what I believe to be currently a clean slate. As you know, this case concerns the role of an attorney retained by a federal sector union. The purpose of the retainer was to assist the union in fulfilling its obligation under federal sector labor law to members of a bargaining unit. Ms. Trish Buell was a member of the bargaining unit of the Federal Education Association Stateside Region, employed at the Fort Knox schools of Fort Knox, Kentucky. She was employed there for quite a while. She was an officer of the local association. She was familiar with the association. In the spring of her last year of employment, an aide reported her for child abuse. I'll get into this in a little bit, but this is a very, very common occurrence, especially with special education teachers. They have by far the most disciplinary cases. But the gist of it is, it is common to have one member of a bargaining unit report another member of a bargaining unit. The general counsel, the union, the association, essentially has four people. They have an area director at the national level, that is. They have an area director who is not a lawyer. They have a general counsel, who's my ex-wife, and they have me. My ex-wife is an employee. I am retained on in essence, a contract employee. That's virtually all I do. The association, through these three people at the national level, and the local officials, each local has a president, a vice president, and a secretary treasurer. And then each building has an FRS or a faculty representative spokesperson. And it's through these individuals that the union fulfills its duties under 5 United States Code Chapter 71 to represent members of the bargaining unit. Now, when we're fulfilling these duties of representing acting on behalf of the union as agents of the union world, if you will, acting as the union, when we're fulfilling our statutory obligation to represent members of the bargaining unit, that duty is defined and the contours are set forth under federal law, 5 U.S.C., primarily, not exclusively, but primarily 5 U.S.C. 7114. Unlike local public sector bargaining units, for example, the teachers at Reynoldsburg when they just bargained a new contract, that's entirely a matter of state law. Entirely a matter of state law. And then there's private sector unions, National Steel Workers, and so forth. And that's it's federal law, but it's private sector law. And that federal private sector law is reviewed. There's a duty of fair representation there also, but the statute allows for courts to review.
So, counselors, your bottom line, you didn't represent Mrs. Buell. Isn't that where you're going with this?
No, I'm saying that the union did represent Ms. Buell.
I understand that, but let's talk about your involvement here. Because my understanding is that you felt that you could not represent her without permission because it was a state court and you weren't able to do that?
I don't believe that to be the case, Your Honor.
Okay.
Since I was retained by the association, I followed the directions of the association as far as representing Ms. Buell. But Ms. Buell was not was not the client in the private sector sense. This is not a case of the union providing legal services, as I believe Mr. Sheets made reference to.
Well, this was an allegation of child abuse by This was an allegation of child abuse by a teacher, and she was discharged by the school board. Am I right?
No, sir, she was. No, I'm sorry. She was not discharged. She was married to an Army colonel. The allegation was made in the spring. It was investigated during the summer. During the summer, her husband received PCS orders to Kwajalein Atoll. Her plan, Ms. Buell's plan, had been to take leave without pay, which is where you, in essence, it's a long-term sabbatical, if you will, but you maintain your status as a federal employee, but you don't keep getting paid. When the allegations came up, since she was a federal employee, they proposed a removal. It was investigated by the Army CID at Fort Knox. They proposed a removal, which is federal for federal personnel for firing.
Did you represent her at those hearings?
It wasn't a hearing, but I did paper represent her. There, at the proposal stage in the federal sector, you get a written notice of proposed removal, and then you have an opportunity to reply in writing.
Counsel, I'm having trouble here. I'm having trouble hearing you. If you'll slow down, the chief asked you a yes or no question.
I'm sorry.
Did you represent her at the hearings?
And I apologize. I'm not trying to be overly literal, but no, Your Honor, I represented the union. The union represented.
Did you respond on behalf of Mrs. Buell in 2008 and 2009?
I believe those are the dates. Yes, ma'am. And it is in the record where I wrote to Elaine Barraza. It's Exhibit 49, and I don't have the exact page number, but it's and I do say that I represent the association and Ms. Buell. Technically, I'm representing the association, and in the capacity of representing the association, I'm representing Ms. Buell.
Were you doing that by yourself, or were you doing it in conjunction with general counsel?
I'm sorry, was I doing it? My hearing aids are not working well. Just as myself or with what, Your Honor?
Were you assisted by any other lawyers?
No, sir.
Okay.
Just myself. And this is common. This is approximately 60 to 80% of my practice at any given time. And this is why, and this is something that unions have an obligation to do. Now, the question is, the point that why it has to be federal preemption in this area of the law is that they have to have the same obligation when we represent teachers at Fort Knox in Kentucky, Fort Stewart in Georgia, West Point in New York, Quantico in Virginia.
Mr. Lee, the question before us is, did you neglect this client's case? All right, I don't necessarily want to hear about federal preemption or what services did you render to this client, Mrs. Buell? And is it true, as has been found, that you did not respond to her and you did not respond to the attorney for the Board of Education, and in essence, she acquired what is a default and she had her license revoked?
And I clearly am having trouble trying to explain this, but I represented the union. The union represented Ms. Buell. I did what my client wanted done. Now, at one point, my client.
So the union had adverse instructions to you, adverse to Mrs. Buell?
Not adverse, but they had a different set of priorities at different periods of time. When Ms. Buell, when the first response to the ESPB went in, there was one area president, one set of priorities. As time went by, there were elections, and there was new leadership and a different set of priorities. And the fact is, my client was the association. I did exactly what my client wanted.
So they told you, don't pay attention to Ms. Buell's case.
They did not say that, Your Honor, and I've not asserted that. But they did have different priorities. There's X amount of time and X amount of resources.
Well, counsel, if I may. Counsel, I'm over here on your right. I know it's hard. If I may, so that we can use your time well today. I'm looking at the record before us at paragraph number 62. And they're saying that you abandoned her matter and abandoned her. You did not act with reasonable diligence. You failed to keep her informed, ignored reasonable requests for information, and failed to turn over her file when new counsel was retained. Do you disagree with any of those findings?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Which one?
I disagree with everything. I never abandoned Ms. Buell.
Okay.
But Ms. Buell was not my client. My client was the Federal Education Association Stateside Region. The files were my client's files.
Well, you were representing the interests of Ms. Buell before the board, am I right?
Again, Your Honor, the association was representing the interests of Ms. Buell.
The representation is that someone from the board tried to contact you and you did not respond. And the further allegation is that as a result of that, they tried to work out a settlement, but it never really got worked out. And ultimately, Ms. Buell's teaching certificate was revoked by the board.
Okay.
Did that occur?
It did occur, Your Honor, but the fundamental problem is people think of a lawyer representing the individual. That's why federal preemption, and I apologize, Madam Chief Justice, but federal preemption is so important because in state law, the individual is what counts. Even if it's somebody's parents paying for a criminal defendant, the criminal defendant is an individual, is the client.
Well, in answer to Justice O'Neill's question, there was a new lawyer who requested your file, and you never sent that file over to the new lawyer. Is that right?
That is right. There was not a new lawyer. Well, he didn't replace me because I wasn't employed to represent Ms. Buell. I was employed to represent the Federal Education Association. The Federal Education Association, Stateside Region, was representing Ms. Buell. And Ms. Buell knew that. And I invite the court's attention to—
Have you ever sent a letter to Ms. Buell saying, I do not represent you?
Not on the record of this case, Your Honor, no. But in fairness, I never said I did represent her, and she knew I didn't represent her. Notwithstanding her testimony, I invite the court's attention to Exhibit 4 at the bottom where she says, I understand, she's talking about her submitting.
Counsel, can you stay at the microphone?
I'm sorry.
That's why it's there.
Yes, sir, ma'am, I apologize. If I could invite the court's attention to Exhibit 49 at pages 14 through 18. That's the January submission by Ms. Buell to the initial submission in response to the Kentucky ESPB. There's no reference, there's no assertion that she is represented by me. I forwarded that to the ESPB at her request because of it had to do with international dateline and when it was, because it was on the due date. But on the cover of the fact sheet, I didn't say I'm submitting this on behalf of my client. I said I'm submitting this as a courtesy to Ms. Buell. And then I said, and it's my understanding that the association would like to submit something further. I invite your attention, please, to Relator's Exhibit 4, where Ms. Buell says, I understand Ray and Dorothy, you'll fax this, and then follow with a supporting union statement. There's no assertion that we're representing her individually.
Did the union have any stake in what was pending before the board? Did the union have any stake in what was presented to the board? Any position before the board?
The union never submitted anything eventually. Now,
you were representing the union on what matter?
Pardon me?
You were representing the union on what matter?
I was, as an agent of the union, I was at that point the union doing the representation of Ms. Buell.
Wait a minute. You never submitted anything on behalf of the union to the board?
To the ESPB?
To the investigating body here.
to the state body a couple years later, there was a, when there was a, she was nervous about a default, and I did submit a letter,
You engaged in discussions between the Board of Education on behalf of Ms. Buell and the union, is that right?
I'm confused because there's no Board of Education in the Kentucky State or the district.
Yeah, the Kentucky State is what I'm talking about.
I know I had some conversations and email exchanges with Ms. Baxter, and I submitted a letter to the hearing officer, but by the time I submitted the letter, he had, unbeknownst to me, he had already entered default.
And that was on behalf of the union, not on behalf of Ms. Buell.
Yes, sir. On behalf of the union, trying to represent Ms. Buell. But not representing, not an attorney representing Ms. Buell, the union representing Ms. Buell.
What did the union do to help Mrs. Buell?
Pardon me?
What did the union do to help Mrs. Buell?
Turned out not terribly much in this case.
They didn't submit a statement on her behalf. They didn't even provide her with a lawyer, according to you.
That's correct, Your
and
Honor.
And she needed a lawyer.
She had a lawyer.
Who?
His name was,
Baxter?
Bland. Mr. Bland.
All right.
He was in operation simultaneous with you?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, yes, ma'am. I invite your attention to Exhibit 52. At the second page, where she talks about, that being said, our private attorney's not been able to, and here she was talking about the family advocacy database, which is one of the two issues, but it's, this is from a 2010 email, so it's well before the default issue, and she says, she's talking about her private attorney, and she's also telling both me and Dorothy, or maybe this one was just Dorothy, I appreciate all your help. I know you owe me nothing as I am no longer a member of the union. This was October 2008. So it was less than a year after she submitted. Also, if I can invite your attention to Exhibit 12, it's April of 2010. Our private attorney asked us not to ask. She's talking about, ask the ESPB if anything had happened. She's telling, this is an email just to Dorothy, not to me. Clearly, she knows that I'm not representing her as an attorney, as her attorney.
In 2012.
This is 2010, Your Honor.
Okay.
But it's Exhibit 12. And it says, our private attorney has advised us not to ask. And she asked Dorothy for a second opinion. Dorothy wrote back, I agree with your private attorney.
Okay, now we've got the issue here is that you were suspended from the practice of law at this time, were you not?
Yes.
You were suspended throughout 05 to 06, 7 to 8, 9 to 10, 11 to 12. A few of those you were reinstated, but you remained under suspension in December of 2010 for failure to complete continuing legal education, and you haven't been reinstated since then, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
So, how could you even be representing the union as a lawyer when you don't have a license?
I'm licensed in California, Your Honor. And that's...
And they don't have reciprocal suspension?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Did you notify them that you were suspended?
No, ma'am.
Well, there you have it.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Mr. Sheets.
Chief Justice, distinguished justices, my name is Don Sheets. I'm here on behalf of Relator, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. I want to address a few things that respondent stated during his argument, but I want to note that the primary difficulty I have in this case is the mountain of evidence against him is so large, it's almost difficult for me to choose which points to emphasize. But I'll do my best to try to respond to what he stated. First of all, he misunderstands the issue here today. You are not regulating him as a federal attorney, as a union attorney. you are regulating his conduct as an attorney admitted to practice in the state of Ohio. End of story. He stated that he was representing the union, that he did not, with regard to Ms. Buell, that he did not receive instruction from the union to act on her behalf, if I've understood what he stated correctly. I'll point you to Exhibit 30 of the record, page 6. It's an email chain. There was an email from Laurel Dawson, who at the time of the emails in 2011, I believe it was November, after Ms. Buell finally found out that Kentucky had permanently revoked her license. She contacted the chapter president, Laurel Dawson. Laurel Dawson then went up her chain and emailed other folks in an attempt to help Ms. Buell. And Laurel Dawson expressly stated that I thought Ray, that is respondent, had this under control back in March of 2011. The union itself thought he was handling the matter. So his argument that the union didn't provide him direction, didn't expect him to represent Ms. Buell is without merit.
Counsel, was he suspended at that time?
Yes, he has been suspended in the state of Ohio since December of 2010. He was suspended an additional time after failing to register for the 2011 and 2012 biennium, and he remains under both suspensions today. Which leads me into another point. He had no reasonable expectation that he would ever be admitted to represent Ms. Buell in the state of Kentucky. If you look under their rules, they expressly state that you can be admitted pro hac vice or provide legal services on a temporary basis if you've been admitted in a jurisdiction and you aren't disbarred or suspended in any jurisdiction.
Did the union know that? Because you stated that it said the union assumed he had it under control. And,
correct.
And if he was suspended, how was he representing the union?
There was testimony to that during the hearing. And respondent's answer to that was that, well, general counsel knew that he was suspended. And then I further clarified, well, general counsel is your ex-wife, correct? Which he admitted. And that was the extent of the union's knowledge, according to respondent during his testimony, was that his ex-wife knew that he was suspended.
So was that to convey the fact in respondent's mind that even though I was suspended and the union knew I was suspended through general counsel, my ex-wife, then it was still okay for me to represent them? Is that what his defense was?
I believe for his regular duties and responsibilities, he does not necessarily need a law license. But for this action in Kentucky, he certainly would have needed it. As to the union's understanding of whether or not he could represent her or should represent her, given the status of his license, I can't speak to that, and I don't know that there's anything in the record discussing that. However, under the Kentucky rules, Rule 1.3, it expressly puts the onus or the burden on the attorney to clarify the relationship, whether it be whether an attorney-client relationship exists at all, whether he's able to practice, unable to practice. It's not the union's obligation to investigate him. It's not Ms. Buell's obligation to clarify
that.
There's
a notice requirement upon all attorneys who are suspended for whatever the reason.
Yes, and in the orders that this court issues, yes. He is obligated to notify clients, et cetera. Respondent talked about Exhibit 49. There's a letter to Elaine Barraza, someone who worked for the school system on Fort Knox. Yes, please look at that exhibit. It's page 10 to 12 of Exhibit 49. Exhibit 49 is a letter from respondent, and he has a series of exhibits attached to it. I believe it's his paginated page 10 to 12. He expressly states, I represent Ms. Buell. At that time, it was with regard to her removal. He says it outright. So to say that he wasn't representing her, he's just trying to play with words. It's a disingenuous argument. He was representing her then. Further part of the record, Ms. Buell clearly and unequivocally testified that she believed respondent was representing her personally. It's on page 262 of the record. He asked her on cross directly, did you believe I was providing you legal services personally? She said yes.
Counsel, there was a suggestion in the prior argument that she had private counsel who was representing her simultaneously. Is that supported in the record?
She did have private counsel. Now, it was Caleb Bland was his name. She retained him when she was first accused. He represented her solely with regard to any potential criminal liability that arose out of it and an additional registry issue. She, Ms. Buell, informed Dorothy Lee the nature of his representation, why he was representing her. It had nothing to do with the school system's investigation of her. That's why Dorothy Lee continued to represent her during the investigation. And he was not there, he, Caleb, was not there to represent her for the disciplinary hearings. And respondent knew that. He knew it. If you look at the emails that were sent in the beginning of 2008, when she makes a reference to a private attorney, respondent doesn't turn around and say to her, well, then your private attorney is going to represent you. Ask these questions about the process to your private attorney. He'll let you know when they file charges. He'll represent you during the hearing. Instead, respondent states, we, the union, Ms. Buell, will review whatever charges are filed, will take whatever action is necessary. He said that not because he thought there was a private attorney, but because he himself knew he was representing Ms. Buell at that time. So he's trying to evade with this sort of general, nonspecific allusion to private counsel, but the fact of the matter is his own statements show that he was representing Ms. Buell and that he believed it to be so.
Counsel, how do you characterize this case? Is this the unauthorized practice of law?
No, this is an Ohio attorney neglecting and abandoning a client at critical points in her case, causing irreparable damage to her professionally and personally.
I understand, but this is an attorney who's under suspension at the time.
Correct.
Was there a fee letter between Mr. Lee and Ms. Buell?
I couldn't hear.
No,
there was no fee.
Existing between Mr. Lee and Ms. Buell in this matter?
There was no fee. And when you review the transcript, you'll see Ms. Buell testified that legal representation is a benefit of being a union member. It's provided to you free of charge or part of your union dues by virtue of your membership for employment-related matters, just like the licensure action.
So she was not obligated to pay any retainer to Mr. Lee for
Correct.
The representation?
Correct. It was a benefit of her union membership.
Counsel, what's her status now with regards to her certificate for teaching?
Her license has been reinstated.
How'd that happen?
It was permanently revoked. When she finally found out about it in November 2011, she again attempted to contact respondent, did not receive a response from him, retained another lawyer, Mr. Walther, in Kentucky. Mr. Walther contacted the prosecutor down there, Ms. Baxter, and was able to negotiate a reduction in the penalty, and she agreed to a 2-year suspension of her license, retroactive to the original
order.
So
credit for time served, or time suspended.
Right, and it's currently, she has been reinstated, although, as she testified in the hearing, she does not know that she'll ever teach again. On the basis of this, the basis of these events, she testified as to how they've affected her professionally, personally. She feared for her own career. She feared for her husband's career, who is currently a colonel in the Army. Because the episode was so public, it went on for years. Things happened without her ever knowing about it. And she never had an opportunity. A respondent robbed her of an opportunity to ever speak in her own defense. And the fear and emotion that's been generated by this incident has caused her to question whether or not she'll ever teach again. And that's
let's look to the sanction that is requested here, which is indefinite suspension.
Correct.
This is commensurate with other cases of neglect.
Yes, Your Honor.
This is one incident of neglect, correct?
It's one incident over years, Your Honor, yes.
Okay. So is it because of the magnitude and the consequence and the fact that, you know, he's had all these CLE suspensions? Is this what...
It's a few things. It's the complete neglect and abandonment of Ms. Buell in her case. It is the failure to cooperate with our investigation. This court has said time and again, failure to cooperate coupled with neglect will result in an indefinite suspension. Now, the court has deviated from that suspension in the presence of sufficient mitigation. I can cite three cases for you. Cuyahoga County Bar Association v. Mulbach, that's 86 Ohio State 3rd, 547. That case, this court found, was an isolated incident of neglect, lacked substantial damage, and he eventually cooperated with the disciplinary investigation. This case contrasts, he never cooperated with our investigation, and there's been irreparable harm.
Is there any allegation or count for practicing law while under suspension?
There is a 5.5 under Kentucky rules, which is practicing in violation of their rules for practice and regulation of the bar. And under that that brings in the suspension, because he had no reasonable expectation of ever being admitted there on a temporary basis on the basis of his suspension. So that's where the practicing under suspension.
The allegation is that he was engaging in the practice of law in Kentucky.
Correct.
Without having been licensed by the state of Kentucky.
Correct.
Is that a matter for us to adjudicate or a matter for Kentucky to adjudicate?
Oh, it is most certainly a matter for this court to adjudicate. This is an Ohio attorney. This is one of ours who's gone out and affected a client for the rest of her life through his neglect and abandonment. This court has an obligation to regulate the practice of law here. And I think once you read the brief, once you read the board report and consider the arguments you've heard today, you'll understand why the citizens of Ohio need protection from this particular.
Yes, counsel, that's why it goes back to my earlier question. I think this case may be bigger than this case here. You continually, and you've done a good job, but you continually call it a neglect case. And I view it as somebody who is practicing law who does not have the authority to practice law.
But the practice occurred in Kentucky, not in Ohio.
Yes, and so let me lay out some of the permutations of fact here. I mean, he is in Dublin, Ohio, a suburb of Columbus, when he's doing this work, at least some of it. She is in Kentucky to start, and then the Marshall Islands, and then Omaha, Nebraska, and Florida, and Virginia. She's all over. And he is in Ohio. The action is in Kentucky. If you look at his letterhead, he cites his California license because he knows he's suspended here. So he's using that license to practice. Now, he's not practicing in Ohio under suspension. He just happens to be here, but he's an Ohio attorney, and he doesn't get it. I mean, he doesn't get it. He thinks the rules don't apply to him. That's what the preemption argument means. The rules don't apply to me, right? And he has acted in an awful way. I mean, no attorney should conduct themselves in this way, and the citizens of Ohio need protection from that. That's the purpose of this court in this proceeding, and that's why we're here today. It's absolutely a matter for this court to consider.
But well, no matter what he did here, as far as what license was being abused, he had a suspended Ohio license. He apparently did not notify California that his license was suspended, and who knows what California would have done. They may have done a reciprocal suspension, but at any rate, he didn't have a pro hoc vice in Florida, or excuse me, in Kentucky to represent Mrs. Buell before the educational board or disciplinary matter. So it's kind of an overlapping, layered offense, course of conduct. This could be a referral to Kentucky, and they could possibly, proceed with UPL against him, but there is he is in violation of his role as an attorney here in the state of Ohio, and that's your premise.
Correct. And actually, let me cite you to an important case. It's Disciplinary Counsel versus True, T-R-I-E-U, and that's 2012, Ohio 2714. That case has some interesting similarities to this one. That was an Ohio attorney who moved to Texas. In Texas, this attorney engaged in an immigration practice, so practiced before a federal body, took some retainers and didn't report them to his firm, just misappropriated the money along with some other misconduct. In 2012, he was disciplined here through the 8.5, through our rule 8.5. 8.5A says that attorneys are subject to our rules regardless of where the conduct occurs, whether it be in Ohio, Texas, Kentucky. And further, under 8.5B and 1, there's a choice of law provision. That particular case used 8.5B2, which is the predominant effect test. The effect of his conduct was in Texas, so Texas rule applied, but he was disciplined here in Ohio for the conduct.
I have one last question regarding the representation of the union as opposed to an individual. Can you comment on that? Because you made a big push for the idea that he was not representing an individual, just the union.
Yes, and he just doesn't understand, frankly. The bulk of his practice may be that he represents members of the union in a grievance process that's created pursuant to a collective bargaining agreement. But if you review the case law that I've cited in my brief, that doesn't mean that he can't represent anyone in another capacity. while he might enjoy some immunity as a result of representing folks in a collective bargaining process, there's nothing that keeps him from entering into an attorney-client relationship and preparing a will or taking a licensure discipline case in Kentucky. Because his regular practice, he might enjoy some tort immunity in state court. It doesn't mean that he can't also represent Ms. Buell in a personal
capacity.
Was
that the intent of the collective bargaining agreement that gave rise to this legal services that was probably afforded all teachers that belong to the union in
yes.
Kentucky, was that we're going to provide a lawyer for you?
Yes, she said. She testified that was a benefit.
That was the benefit of having this relationship with the union. One of the benefits of the union is that they were going to provide legal representation.
Yeah, it's never we're going to provide legal representation to the union, and you may benefit as an aside. It's we'll represent you.
Right.
Yes, correct. Absolutely. He represented her in this case. He neglected her case. He abandoned her, failed to cooperate with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Lee, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor, members of the court. I'll try to be extremely quick. One, federal law does not require a lawyer, a licensed attorney, to represent a federal sector union. To be employed by federal sector unions, our presidents do it all the time. Personnelists act before the Merit Systems Protection Board, federal sector arbitration, and federal sector EEO complaints. I would just say quickly that as far as the cooperation, I answered everything I got, and I invite your attention to Exhibit 53. It is entirely possible. Stuff just doesn't get delivered. That involved the people sending the transcript conceded that it got lost by the UPS. And then thirdly, there was never any fee. There was no gain here. And it's clear the court disproves, and I understand that. There was never any attempt to gain on my part, period. So,
thank you.
I appreciate your time. Thank you.
We will take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, will you please adjourn court?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.